Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everybody to another program of Missing Pages of History. And always, we are very thankful for you to allow us to come into your homes this evening, where we can share with you information that we think is important that you can use to make a better day, a brighter future, and to ensure that humanity goes forward. Today, we basically have an open topic. We have some chats on some current events with one of our contributors and analysts of Missing Pages of History, Mr. Emmanuel Joyner. He'll be sharing his perspectives on some current events. We'd like to later on open up our mics, and we'd like to invite you, the community, to come and discuss with us and share with us some of the things that are going on in your community as relates to current events and hot topics. And you can reach us always on Missing Pages of History at 818-337-0016. That's 818-337-0016. As your host, Lee Robinson, we will now begin our program with welcoming one of our contributors and analysts of Missing Pages of History, Emmanuel Joyner. How are you doing today, Mr. Joyner?
How you doing today, Mr. Robinson?
Good, good. No
cold, that's all. No cold, no snow. Down here in North Carolina. In Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay, and we know on this whole East Coast that snow thing has been a problem on the whole East Coast. We just recently had a water pipe bust on the highway. They've been flooding the highways in Richmond, Virginia, and been causing all kind of traffic problems yesterday. So hopefully they said we're supposed to get a little bit more warm weather on the coast and the days will be a little more pleasant. But in the process of saying that, Mr. Joyner, can you make our people's lives a little more pleasant in terms of, we'd like to get your perspective on this recent decision out of New York called Stop and Frisk, what recently took place and how would that maybe improve relationships within the community in New York and maybe throughout the country, if other countries can follow the lead. What is your take on this whole position of the decision of the recently made in New York concerning the Stop and Frisk policy?
Well, the new mayor there, newly elected Mayor de Blasio, there's an appeal going to keep that law in force, Stop and Frisk. And, of course, he said we're not going to do the appeal, the new mayor. Giuliano wanted to make sure they keep it enforce Stop and Frisk. And de Blasio says it's not going to happen. So New York is not going to happen. And what had happened was that they were targeting basically African Americans and Latinos, Hispanics. 85% of the people who were stopped was this, ethnicity. They found out, after they did this for a couple of years, did a study on it, that 88% of the people that they stopped and frisked, nothing was going on, basically. No trouble with the law, clean records, this and that. One young man came with the interview and stopped him 63 times. He was 17 years of age. He said he was just scared to walk the street, but every time he turned around, they're throwing you up against the wall or setting you on the curb and they're frisking you on top of a car. Were you coming from church or were you coming from the movie? Were you coming from a restaurant? This is what they would do. And you had to watch them close because they would plant things in your pocket. They'll plant narcotics or marijuana in your pocket. The police would do that. So they had to watch themselves. So they went as two and three together so one of them could film what was going on, or they made sure somebody would film, or they'd holler help and film this. And that's when they would basically stop. But that law is gone now. The Stop and Frisk. De Blasio made a huge, in his State of the Union address, the mayor of New York, that is over. And thanks to people like Reverend Sharpton, who actually led the movement to make sure this didn't happen any further or to protest against it. And Giuliano, he came back, because they basically knocked him down a little bit. He got a stay of order. And what happened was that he put it back in again to knock it down and to appeal it, because it was not, you know, it was being put down like it was, but the Blasso, he made it all clear. It's not going to happen. And it saves a lot of money, too. A lot of money. And police can do police work and not just stopping and frisk people and suspicion. But again, the numbers validate themselves that 88% of the people they stopped had no criminal record, didn't do, I mean, just zero. So what are we talking about here? It just, you know, again, you want the police and the community to work together. You can't work together when this is happening. You'll never work together if that's going to happen. Constant, especially on two ethnic groups. And that's, again, that was pointed out and elaborated on, that 85% you're stopping these two ethnicities. Excuse me there. But that's my take on that, Lee.
You know, in terms of the response of the law enforcement, they argue that if you deny them the right to stop and frisk, it takes away a valuable tool to have to do law enforcement.
And but they proved that tool, the percentage of that tool was not working.
Can you repeat that again, Mr. Joyner?
They proved, they disapproved that tool wasn't working. 88% of the people they stopped. So by the time you have a valuable tool, it's got to be low, you know, it's got to be 49% or lower. That's when it's a negative. But being that a high, that's called a high positive at 88%. That's a high positive. So that's why the law, again, is not going to be, it's not going to be appealed.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought it was real interesting in terms of the argument.
They always have an argument when you're losing.
Without it.
Yeah, you're right. But again, the numbers prove, the numbers verify that. They had to keep records every time they stopped and frisked someone. They had to keep a record of it. Of course, people have pictures and everything else. A lot of things are recorded doing these type of things. But one man gets stopped 63 times? That's crazy. Because an average person, average African-American, was stopped 15 times on an average, the same person. I mean, you in a certain neighborhood all the time. If you're stopping the same person, he's not that far out. So you're stopping the same person all the time. So what are you doing?
Yeah, Mr. Jordan, before we move over to the next subject, I'd just like to let our listening audience know that they are listening to Missing Pages of History. Basically, doing open copy, current events.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to hear from you. You are welcome to call in at 818-337-0016, 818-337-0016. Getting back to this whole law enforcement thing, Mr. Joyner, we see recently anywhere from 4 to 6 months, there have been incidents where the law enforcement officers are conducting themselves in a way that are not very professional. For example, I saw on the news yesterday when I think it was in Michigan, one of the police officers ended up hand-tying a young lady to a chair, ended up cutting all her hair off her head and putting her weeds off against her will. We have seen police officers just outright shoot innocent young men in the street for no reason at all. Looking at the behavior of these law enforcers, can you maybe give your take on what allowed the condition exists to allow law enforcement to behave in such a reckless manner, and there seem to be no consequences of that? You know, how can human beings treat other human beings like this? What is your take on that? What allowed a human being to even be in a position to even behave in that kind of capacity as it comes to another human being?
Well, my take on that, Mr. Robinson, is that they're hiring the wrong people. I don't think there's enough background check behind these people. People are not being audited. Their behavior patterns, like I say, you're going to have bad apples regardless of what you do. But the consequences are is not severe. Incident here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where a young man was in a car accident. He went to a home and needed help. And he called 911. Police arrived, and they shot this young man unarmed 11 times. I believe they shot him 5 times while he was laying on the ground. Well, that's a protest in Charlotte. I don't understand that one. How could you do some of that magnitude? But that's just what they do. It's an extension of what they used to. The extension of slavery, extension of Jim Crow, segregation. They have, you know, they got this ticket. They can do what they want to do, especially to African Americans, because they're used to doing this. They're used to shooting them. If you watch the movie The Butler, it started off with the foreman just shooting the guy. Just shooting him, so we not, no problem. Easy. And no prosecution. Mm. Well, they're used to this. This is an extension of what they was doing then, and they figured they can do it now. I went to see a movie while I was out there. Fruitvale Station, Oakland, California. Young man got killed at the train station for a New Year's party. He was leaving. He don't drink or do anything. Police shot him. Killed him. Police got 11 months. It was murder. They moved it from murder to, I think, to second-degree murder and moved it to manslaughter. They gave him, I think, 5 years. He said they served 11 months, something like that. But they know there's no consequences. They know it's not. The incident happened in Florida. Former police captain shot a young man in the movie. He was texting his babysitter, 3-year-old child. Him and the wife's going out. They've been out quite some time. They've been going to check the movie out. Previews is on. Not the movie, but the previews. And he was texting. And the guy told him, don't be texting. Nothing to do with nothing. Got involved. They said that he threw the popcorn in the guy's face. I don't believe that, but it happened. A popcorn versus a, you know, 9mm, it's no contest. He went out to his car. The former police captain got a gun, came back in the movie theater. Could have killed more people, basically. But he came back in the movie theater. And he killed this young man, shot his wife in the hand. They arrested him. But how did they arrest him? He had a bottle of water in his hand, walked to the police car, no handcuffs on, no nothing. What kind of arrest was that? But this is what they do. They let you show right in front of your face how they're going to arrest you and how they're going to arrest them. It's two types of arrests. It's always been a double standard. And we have to attack it with a lot of more force than we're doing it. I know Joan is doing this now. And that's what he's doing. He's trying to say, this is the deal. African-Americans, Latinos, basically 7 years more time and more sentencing than for the European-American does for the same crime. 7 years more for the same crime. That is preposterous. But this happens. This is truth. These all stats. Look at the justice system. You can go in there again, check the prison statistics, and they'll tell you what the sentencing for certain crimes are. You can check the almanac. You can go into all these systems. You can check and see what the sentencing for the same crime of African American opposed to European. You'll find out that we get 7.5 years longer than. But again, the prison system is broken. Been broken. Don't have a chain gang no more. They very rare to have a chain gang anymore. But more of them are private. They're private prisons, private institutions, and they need to make money. They need prisons to make money so the federal government can pay them or a state can pay them. And they're about 30% cheaper to keep them in a private institution than the state institution or a federal institution. So it's all about money. This is all about private enterprise. And this is all about capitalism again. How to capture on capitalism. What do I need to capture to keep capitalism, you know, and forceful and make sure that we're in charge all given time? So this is what's going on. They need to do better background checks on police officers. They need all types of behavior training, community training, things they need to know. They need to go to some almost every month to make sure that they do their job and do it correctly. They got to be in the community. Need to get on some porches and drink coffee and drink tea or something and talk to people. Need to go to the church and talk to people. Things they need to do, become a better police officer. Because some of them should not be police officers. They should not be. And they know that themselves. They know how they are. They got that rage inside of them. Because they got it from their parents and from their grandparents and what they see. So it's all there. It's implanted. It's hard for the zebra to change his stripes. Very difficult. Very difficult.
Yeah, because some people see this as a form of a war against people of color. And it's having an impact psychologically. A lot of people out there are very fearful of going out in the public. They're fearful for standing up and fighting for their rights. Figure out there'll be other retaliation based upon them just, you know, doing the right thing. So I'm just wondering, you know, Mr. Joyner, as an advocate for justice and fairness, when you dramatize the people, how do you get them to respond more responsibly? Because we see this on a daily basis, but they seem like they have no response to it. So how do you get the people to respond to it in a favorable manner? What would be your solution?
Well, again, you have to go out into the community, make sure you have these meetings every month, make sure they, you know, convene at community churches or community, you know, when they have meetings, community meetings, AARP for the older people, and how do you reach the young teenager? And they should go to the school system, and police officers, you know, should be able to talk to the teens. Because here's the interesting stat. Between the ages of 13 years of age and 18, African Americans and Hispanics will have some dealing with the police 85% of the time. That means 15 kids now, but they're 85 going to. And they're priming them for the, you know, for the prison system, because they got to keep the prison system loaded. They have to, cause that's what they do. So these are places they need to go to, and make it mandatory that they attend something at least every quarter. Every quarter there should be a community, you know, meeting in that particular precinct to meet with the community leaders, meet with the youth, meet with the women, with everybody. Because that's only their child. You're talking about mothers' children. A lot of mothers are single mothers. So, yes, meet with the mothers. There are some single fathers out there have their children, so make sure that happens. Nobody needs that extra expense. Nobody needs that extra inconvenience going to the prison system to see their child or this or that, and your child getting 3 and 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 years for doing shoplifting, some little crazy thing out there, smoking marijuana, this and that, they don't pay it no mind. They talk about Justin Bieber shouldn't do no jail time because he got money, because he's rich. If a black youth had done what Justin Bieber did with marijuana, drugs, everything else, speeding, no driver's license, no this or that, they'd be in jail. They would be in jail. And I know and everybody else knows. But if that's, again, yeah, the money is the problem is the money and being basically European Americans. You get all the opportunities. You are not at a disadvantage at no given time, basically. African Americans, they're at a disadvantage. Almost 100% of the time, they're at a disadvantage. They don't mind locking you up. They want to keep this persona over your head all the time. So when you call a police officer, it's a domestic type thing. You don't want your husband to get killed or your cousin or an uncle or anybody in the field. You don't want to do that. That's why they don't call. Because they know how they're going to react. Have no idea what the reaction is going to be.
And that's a very shallow way of intensifying crime or behavior within your community against yourself. And
well, intimidation versus, you know, the rightful behavior. And most of them, they come to intimidate. They want to call your names to intimidate you. They want to throw you down or do that to you when it's not necessary. All this stuff is not necessary. You tell them putting the handcuffs on too tight, they tighten them even more. See, those are the kind of things they do. Then they just threaten to shoot you all the time. Threaten to shoot you right in your heart or your chest, opposed to a leg or anywhere else they can shoot. And it's been most time they come in bunches. It's like a posse. That's the way they come.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a woman or a youth or whatever, they come as a posse. And when they come as a posse, you know what the problem is. That's why they show them on TV, as posses. That's the way they came. And this is an extension of that. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Nothing different.
Okay, we're going to take a little pause for a call for a sucker and to let our audience know that we now have our phone line open. We'd like for you to call in and share with us your views, perspective on some of the current events and with us some of the things going on in your community. Well, if there's anything that you have heard today, you feel free to speak to her. You can call in 818-337-0016. We also like to remind our community that we are hosting our annual quarterly raffle fundraiser drawing. It will take place February 22nd. Tickets are still available. If you're interested in supporting Missing Pages history, this is one way you can do it. Feel free to give us a call at 804-519-0347, the 804-519-0347. Or if you'd like to support us in our work where we're trying to build our strong communities through communication, you can always send any kind of donations you can send in to Missing Pages of History at P.O. Box 27, 782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. That P.O. Box 27, 782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. We thank you for your support. Right now, we have a caller that's been waiting. We're going to go to our caller. We're going to pronounce your last four numbers. We can ask you if you can state your first name and where you're calling for. Caller, phone line number 9289. Caller number 9289. Your question or comment, please. Yes, caller, you're now.
No. I was just listening to Mr. Joyner and you, and it is a problem because when you look around, most of the time it's very seldom that you see a police by themselves, and they do usually appear to be in two or three at a time, or either you'll see two or three cars will come, because I know in the neighborhood I live in and stuff, but thing of it is, I'd like to ask both of you, how can you really combat that? What can we tell our youth so they won't get caught up into being stopped?
Okay, we'll let Mr. Joyner take that question. Mr. Joyner, what do we tell our youth? How do we deal with these police forces? When they do come, they don't come as one, they come as threes and fours. First, how we keep ourselves out of their predicament, and if you are in their predicament, what do you tell the young people?
Well, first thing you have to do is make sure they put their hands up and open our hands up so they have no palms. You want to open their hands totally up or put their hands behind their back. That's the procedure the police want you to do anyhow, so do that. And again, just state your name, where you live, who your mother and father is, and ask for your one phone call if there's something that's going down that you don't like. But stop and frisk is something totally different because that's almost like police brutality right away. Because right away they throw you up against the wall. They say you get down. They draw their guns on you. Say, well, why are you stopping and frisking me? That's what you're gonna say. Why are you stopping me? I haven't done anything. They don't like you to say anything of this magnitude. They should just be quiet and to ask you something that's relevant and keep it relevant. Don't curse, use profanity, none of that type of stuff. Because, again, they have the advantage. That's what our youth need to do. And, again, we need advisors from our councils at the school. Make sure they start talking to teenage kids when they're 12, 13, 14 years of age. They should have an auditorium, almost every month to talk to the teenage youth. The principal, assistant principal should be talking to them about and have the police to come in. So you have a more of a community interaction, intertwining, to both. Because that is law enforcement. That's what it's called. And again, you're trying to get a good education. You don't want to bury your child in things. You don't want it to happen. But most of the time, they shoot first. If you have a weapon, they're going to say something about a weapon. Could have a weapon. When you do a background check of this or that, he could be dangerous. But what the word dangerous mean? These are the kind of words they use. These are police shadow words. These are the chop words they use so they can have a response in case something happened. It'd be a positive response on their part. That's what they're going to say. But a gun against a mouth against a 9mm, there's no contest. And most lawyers don't even fight it like I would fight as an attorney. That's how I would fight it. A mouth against a gun, there's nothing. Popcorn against a 9mm? What are we talking about here? But again, they try to make a case out of nothing. So these are kind of things you have to watch out for and be prepared for, and these are kind of things should be taught, especially in African-American inner-city schools, how to interact with the police. This should be basic a subject matter they should teach, and every child should go through it. Because, again, like you said, there's a war on African Americans and Hispanics to a certain degree. And that's what we need to teach in these school, in the school system. That's where they're going to see them every day. And again, at the church on Sunday. So they have one day, you might say, to get off that diet. But Saturday is when they go to the mall, when they go to the movie, when they do things, when they go out. Parents give them money on Saturday to go out. And they go out at 3 and 4 and 5 at one time, going to the mall. Or right away. They already got piercing what's going on. So these are the kind of things we got to watch out for. You got to tell them about Saturday. What happens on Saturday? They got homework most of the time through the week. But Saturday, they're a free day. Then Sunday, some of them go to church, some don't. But again, the church should have like a youth day, a youth week at the church, a youth Sunday. So they can talk to them again about everything that encircled in the environment. And this is all true stuff. And read them examples. Tell them they should go look at Foodville Station. Look at that movie. You look at The Butler. Things they need to look at. See? They need to look at the movie called The Help. Things they should look at. This is history, but it's good history. And our job is to give them the missing pages of history. And this is the missing pages. They don't want you to read about these pages. That they used to, they kill 11 in Arkansas every year. They shoot them. I throw them in the river and feed the fish. This is history. We need to do that. We need to emphasize that in our schools.
Yeah, we know up in Detroit there's some things going on in Cole Harbor community where they are claiming that the police department is openly participating in assassinating young African men openly. They're finding bodies floating to rivers. They're stopping people. Recently in Philadelphia, there was an incident where a young police lady was searching a young African student male out of high school, and she ruptured his testicle intentionally. And then this young man would never be able to have kids in life. And people just watching, this kid was a straight A student. So, I don't know. They're going sort of wild, Mr. Joyner. They're going real wild. But in terms of making the transformation from this subject to the next one, Mrs. Joyner, can we talk a little bit about what's going on with Governor Chris Christie out of New Jersey? Can you give people just a general understanding of the recent update of what's going on with his administration and what we need to be aware of?
Well, the closing of the lanes going to Fort Lee yesterday was breaking news. Well, his inner circle, name was Weinstein, said Chris acknowledged the lane closures during the closures. Well, basically saying he was lying and been lying for the last 3 or 4 months, then in firing people and people resigning, people taking the fifth, people not turning documents over, they're not going to do it, through a subpoena. Now, 20 subpoenas have been handed out, 3 to organizations, 17 to people. Monday, the subpoenas are due. He is still trying to make a statement. All of a sudden now, some of his people are lawyering up. They get lawyers. The state is paying for some of them, and the state is not. Now, Mr. Weinstein, the state is not paying for him lawyering up. And he took the fifth, but he also made a statement that Governor Christie knew during the closures, not in January, like he said he knew. Or he read, and all of a sudden he read in the newspaper afterwards, but he didn't make a statement afterwards. People were stuck for 4 and 5, 6 hours. Again, they said there was a problem. They claimed that the mayor of Fort Lee was not endorsing him. And being Italian, they think, again, a little different than most people. Very, very bullish, invincible. They're the bad boys on the block. That's the way he thinks, that he's invincible. Can't nobody tell him to do anything. He runs everything just like a mafia boss. And this is the type of person he is. I have no idea he became mayor. And thinking about, I mean governor, and talking about trying to run for president? Well, I think that he's about 12% now. He was at 32%, now he's at 12. Nobody wanted to do anything, but they can't trust him. Again, how did this guy, his administration, the governor, let something happen for 4 days? You don't know anything about it? That's impossible. That's preposterous. But now, one of the key witnesses who've been subpoenaed say he has evidence. Well, I got a problem with that. When you say you're supposed to turn over all the documents, is that document evidence? If that's part of the document you're supposed to turn in and you're trying to get immunity? So now the defense is going to say that he's trying to get immunity for the documents that he has not turned in. So evidently he got something to say. Or he has something where it'd be a, you know, email, where it'd be posted or some type of message on his phone, his cell phone. Nobody knows. He said he has evidence that Christie knew about the lane closures. So that's amazing that he knows it. But on the side of that, he has problem with Sandy, the storm, the money being misguided, misappropriated. That's going to be a problem for him. He got some campaign things coming up, funds again being earmarked. So he's got quite a few things. Once they start to digging, you're going to find more and more and more. He is in abrupt trouble. He could, again, face federal charges, because that's interstate commerce going from New York to New Jersey. That's the busiest bridge in the world. It's Bridgegate, but it's the largest bridge, travel bridge in the world, the largest. So that is, how can you have something like this close, not in the United States, but in the world? We're talking about China, we're talking about Russia, we're talking about Japan, we're talking about other countries that are very high, heavily populous. India, this is the busiest bridge in the world. And he don't know about it for 4 days? That's impossible. So I know he's lying. He know he's lying. He done called everybody a bunch of names. Like again, he done fired people. People resign from over $200,000 a year job. You resign from that type of job? Please. So there's going to be a lot to be told, and the subpoenas come in Monday. And the person is pleading the fifth. I think it's his campaign manager. He's pleading the fifth, and he don't turn away any documents and been subpoenaed to do so. So we know he's going to jail. Well, if they subpoena you, that's it. There's going to be a warrant for his arrest. He's going to jail. I guess he knows that. He's going to lawyer up and get out, but he's lawyering up real quick, and they're getting the finest lawyers they can get. $600, $700, $800 an hour lawyers. So it's going to be very interesting. I'm going to keep tabs on that because I want to see when they locked up the mayor of Detroit, not a problem. Locked up Jesse Jackson's son, misappropriation, not a problem. We're going to see what goes on with this one. The mayor, the governor of Virginia, we're going to see what's going to happen there. See? So we've got to keep watching this stuff because, again, these are the ones we got to make examples and copy these examples. This is how you protest. This is how you do things, because now you got an example. And we got to stay on top of this. We got to follow this. We can't lose sight of this. This is very, very disturbing because people were sick. Ambulances couldn't buy it. There had been a fire. Nobody could get there in time. I heard a person died. There are suitcases being filed. So all this stuff is crazy. Now, on the week of the Super Bowl, subpoena's going to come Monday after the Super Bowl. He's not going to have a very enjoyable day at the Super Bowl. He's not going to have not a very enjoyable day at all. Super Bowl will not be in his head. That's my take on Governor Christie.
I'm not quite sure. Well, this money laundering, you know, I already had that Super Bowl. But in terms of moving forward, Mr. Jordan, I would like to actually respond to the statement as we look at the crimes that are taking place under the political system. Most people may well argue that those who win the election or win the seats, they have the power to delegate and do as please. You reward your friends and punish your enemy. Do you find what he has done any different from any other politician who acquired power and stature?
No. No, that's what he has done.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah, what he has done is preposterous in my book. I mean, things he has done. If you're not his friend or not his inner circle, you get punished through real estate dealings, through projects, through contractual projects for the city, refurbishing property. You only get the award of these type of deals, and this is what they get. So we were speaking about Hoboken County, the mayor there. They wanted 60 acres of prime property. Well, they threatened her, then give her the money from Sandy like she supposed to get. They downgraded everything to her, and she's taking them to court behind it. But again, she didn't support him. And they want that 6 acres of land developed by his boys, by his friends. And when that happens, especially among the Italians, that's a problem, because they're the big-time contractors. They're not so much developers. They're the one wanting to do the building, because there's a lot of money involved there, a lot of cost overruns. They want to get paid. This is what they do. If his buddies don't get the contract, then you're not going to develop that unless you go up under him. Very simple.
Hey, Mr. Joyner, can I stop you for a second? Can you explain to your audience the difference between a contractor and a developer?
Well, a contractor basically does the building. Let's say there's some land clearance. A developer, his job is to develop the land. The contractor builds on the land. That's put it bluntly so it's understandable. The developer, he starts out land to develop. Communities, subdivisions, buildings. They got to check it out to make sure that it can be developed under all circumstances. He puts together the package. He puts together the politicians. He puts together the banking. He does all of this. He's like an executive producer. Gets the money for a film. And he produces that. He don't direct it. So you might say the producer, gets the film together, director, he the one actually makes the movie. So that's the developer who develops the land and the contractor who actually builds on the land.
Okay. Well, John, well said. I just want to make sure our audience has a better understanding when you use the two terms.
Yeah, the developer, puts the team together. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Recently, staying with the field of politics, what would be your take from the President Barack Obama State of the Union message the other day? What did you or what could you surmise from that?
I thought it was superb. I thought it was his best of his 5 speeches he had done for, State of the Union address. That was his best one because, again, I like when he said, I have a pen, I have a telephone. He will use his executive powers for the first time. But then he called him a dictator. He has done 147 executive orders. Ronald Reagan did 293. He has done the lowest of 150 years of any executive powers. Executive powers, there's in the Constitution things he can do. He can do things that pertain to the government, basically. All right? What I'm saying, to make an example of that, he can raise the minimum wage, you might say, on contracting for the government. He can do it by executive order. He can't do it overall to the public. He can't do that. Congress has to approve that. Okay? A little bit different. They haven't raised the minimum wage in almost 30 years. So when you look at that, I thought that was fantastic. I think the military was fantastic. Do better there. I thought when he spoke about the women's rights, women should pay the same amount of money as men for doing the same work. I agree totally with him. I have no problem with that. And again, women in the workplace should be rewarded just like men with bonuses and everything else, and have a day off to having a child. Taking care of the child, taking them to school, getting sick, and not should be punished for that. So everything he said, I'm dealing with the foreign policy. Superb. We don't need a war. War is expensive. You see what it do to us. Economy slows down in some areas because, again, people who make war goods, the economy for them goes way up. And that's mainly Wall Street. Your Fortune 500 companies, so Wall Street goes, you know, do their thing. Dow Jones do their thing. A lot of companies that's in warfare on Dow Jones, the Dow Jones 30. So you got to look and see who's on it and say, well, oh, yeah, well, this is, you know, one side of the economy. And this way it's going to be war and peace. When you got a peaceful economy, it don't thrive as much. And when you have a war economy, it don't thrive as much. But a war, again, is so one-sided that the other side don't have anything. So you get a peaceful economy, I believe, is much better because everybody can share in the wealth. Everybody can get paid like it's supposed to get paid. But when, again, when it gets to a war, then the people who are making the war goods, that is the one that pays the money. Then the economy goes down because, again, 900,000 soldiers have been wounded in these two wars. 900,000, almost a million, been wounded. And almost 5,000 have been killed. So when you look at war, it's not what you want to be at. And drones are much better because they're not humans. But again, drones only attack things that, again, that, you know, that's contrary to a war that can punish you. They attack the railroads, your transportation system. That's what they did. They do your artillery system. That's what they attack. And they bomb those places with people. So drones are very, very, you know, but you don't want to put boots on the ground. Drones are necessary. And they get more sophisticated all the time. They're going to deliver your mail after a while, or maybe your packages to your home, drones, in the near future. So, again, I thought the trade policy was good. We got to make that even, bringing jobs, that rewarding companies for coming back here to America and, you know, to put people to work, but again, at a decent wage. I think 10-10 is easy. We have to do that. You can't have 67% of your people living with poverty wages. You can't have that. 47% one person working a household, that is poverty wages. So, I'm sorry. 67% is poverty wage, and one working with two working is 47% in poverty. So again, you talk about jobs as, you know, under $20,000 per year, and you tell you got to get taxes out of there. You got to, you know, go back and forward to work, automobile, gas. How much you have left? So you're working at $7.15. You earn about $3 an hour. That's all you end up with, $3 an hour, $24 a day. So that's a problem. You know, again, these accounts, we have to understand statistics and numbers. And put things in perspective and think and be a critical thinker. Think things out. You know, I dissect everything that I talk about. I get numbers. Numbers is the name of the game. That's the only way you can do anything is by numbers, by budgeting, things you have to time it, put in a time frame, preparation. All these things got to be there for you to be successful in life. And to live in America, you can't live on a poverty wage to live here. Very difficult to live in poverty in America. Very difficult. And 1% have most of the wealth. Has 40% of the wealth belong to 1%. That's crazy.
Okay, Mr. Jordan, we are out of time. We'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing Mr. Paisley History for coming to home this evening to share some of your views and thoughts and ideas on some of the current events and major topic for this week. We'd like to share with the audience, remind them that we are hosting our first quarterly raffle fundraiser, which will take place February 22nd. We still would like to have your support. If you'd like to purchase a ticket, you can always call us at 804-519-0347, or you can send any contribution or donation to Missing Pages History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. This is a quarterly program that is aired on Saturday noon time. You can always reach us again by going to Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. And you can go to the archives and view all programs that we have produced for the past year and a half. So until next time, we'd like to thank you for listening, and remember, let's continue to fill our missing pages of history. Until next time, stay strong. Bye-bye.